Right, Andrew, how's it going?
Good, and you, man?
Good, good. So we're going to be chatting about, I think, something that we're both quite passionate about, and that's photographing Africa's great apes.
They really are great, aren't they?
Yeah. So we're going to get into a little bit more. I mean, you've done a lot of Congo as well, which we'll get into, and I've done the chimp side. But I think one that we've both done is the mountain gorillas in Burundi. Talk us through that, you know, first of all, from an experience point of view, seeing them for the first time and then photographing them for the first time.
Yeah, cheap as it really, I think for a lot of people, it is a bucket list experience, and that term gets thrown around a lot. But there's something quite special about seeing these animals up close and personal. So one of the things that really stood out for me, having trekked in Odzala before but never trekked in Uganda, was just how close we were able to get to them. And I think for anyone listening now, you know, there's a great podcast Luke and I did around Buhoma Lodge, and you know, just how great that is as a point of departure, and all of our scheduled tours we run out of there, and just how geared they are for gorilla tracking. So I think for this podcast now, we're going to talk about photographing these animals. And so for me, that was one of the things which I had known about, you know, chatting to you guys and seeing images, just how close you can get. But once you're there, you actually have to just drop the camera and look and say, wow, I'm this close to this amazing animal.
Exactly.
So it really is a very, very special and thrilling encounter.
Yeah. I think also one of the great things, you know, on our schedules and also on most of our privates, is doing multiple treks, you know, because you can see multiple, different families, different, you know, composition of the families. You know, some might have really small babies, some might have more than one silverback in there. But it also gives you an idea, you know, or helps people to kind of review their images after day one. Because, I mean, let's face it, even if you've done the gorillas many times before, that first trek, the excitement is so much that you do end up messing up quite a few of the first shots just from pure excitement. That, you know, on your second and third trek, when you get a little bit more composed, I feel that's when you're really creating better images.
100%. So maybe that's actually a good place to start. How many treks should someone do?
Yeah.
How many would you say?
So I would say three, I think, is the sort of the sweet spot. I mean, obviously, if you can do more, it'd be great, but they are expensive. I'd say minimum two. Ideally three.
I would agree with that 100%. And you know, from my experience last year when I went for the first time, again, having a great local guide who, even though they're not with you on the trek, and depending where you are, which family you're viewing, is basically their role is to get you there with the vehicle that you have, but they have good contacts with those local rangers.
Absolutely.
And so our three different treks, diversity, habitat, and groups. Our first trek, we made a mission and we saw the newest member of that family, which was 3 weeks old at
That's
the time.
Amazing.
So first trek, baby gorilla, mind blown.
Yeah.
Second trek, with our same local guy on the ground there from the park side of things, we got to view the largest gorilla family in there. Now, more members means that there's probably more opportunities. A lot of them can be obscured through the thickets. And then the third group was in an area that they typically are a little bit more out in the open. So three completely different treks, completely different photographs that came from each of those, different habitats, different experiences, and different trekking lengths, you know, in terms of walking as well. So I would agree, diversity. And so that maybe leads us into the diversity of gear that you've got to carry, or rather have a porter carry for you.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, people often don't realize how close you get to them. You know, so people often, you know, rock up with massive prime lenses. I found 70 to 200 has been my go-to every single time. I would like to, I think that new 100 to 300 from Canon would be...
That's what I had last year. And that, and I had a little, my trusty 35mm 1.8 on me. That'd just be, for something super wide. And I was very happy with that combination. But you know, the 100 to 300 is quite a unique and specialized piece of kit, but that 70 to 200 and something like a 24-70 or a 35mm.
Yeah.
The most important thing here is that maximum aperture, right?
Yes. Yeah. Because you are dealing with low light in the forest. I found that sort of shooting wide, especially if it's kind of like half forest, half sort of out in the open, it can become very tricky from exposure point of view, because you've got obviously a very dark subject, dark part of the forest, and then you might have like very bright skies around it. So I haven't sort of played around a lot with shooting really wide, because ideally, you know, contrary to what people might think, I find it's actually easier if they all in the dark forest, you know, if it's all kind of the same sort of light.
You want, that makes sense. Yeah, you want uniform light. And in the forest, often it's dappled light.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you. And I think that's where the 300 is quite handy over the 70 to 200 or something like a 400. But, you know, to go in with a 400 2.8, you're going with a very fixed, focused goal here.
Yeah.
And that's when you're starting to cut out all the background, all the noise, you shallow depth of field and starting to look where, you know, little things where there's light falling on the hands.
Yes.
Against the dark body or just in the eye as the eye as the animal looks up.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Dappled light is tricky. It's like trying to photograph a leopard on a branch with dappled light.
Yeah.
You underexposed to protect the bright areas, but then all the dark areas that are, and if the eyes are in the dark. So it can be an exposure conundrum. And thinking to Odzala, where the Western lowland gorillas are far more arboreal, you start shooting up into light and man,
that becomes tough.
Yeah, it really does become a challenge. So I think that's where you're right, that 70 to 200 allows you, given how close you are, to zoom into 200 mils and to start to isolate particular features.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're already starting to go down of, you know, what are the things that you're looking for in a photograph of a gorilla?
Yeah.
And then the 35, you know, for me, that lens is just so versatile. It really, it's a small lens. It's like half the size of I'm looking at my iPhone here. It's half the size of that in terms of, you know, the actual physical size and weight of it. And it just to be able to try something a little wider. There was only one scene out of our three treks that I really used it, but I was very happy with what I got in that space.
Yeah.
But the 70 to 200 is probably, if you take one piece of kit, that would be the one.
Yeah.
So we need that f2.8 to achieve autofocus, also to cut through busy foregrounds.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite things. So maybe let's talk about what we look for when you're photographing gorillas. What are the things that you...
So, like, I love the eyes. I mean, the eyes for me is like, that's just, you know, it creates that sort of... a theme of, you know, that provocative thinking that, you know, with gorillas, you know, it's not a kind of a blank stare, you know, they're clearly very intelligent animals. So I'm very attracted to the eyes. And then of course the hands as well, that texture is just
down to fingernails and
unbelievable.
And so there you're zooming in to isolate those particular features.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a full frame portrait of, you know, the bridge of the nose, the eyes.
Yeah.
It can be quite tricky because they've got a bit of a brow line as well, right? So
you
still want catch lights in the eyes.
Absolutely.
In a forest with dappled light, but not too much dappled light. You just want a little bit.
Yeah.
It's quite they're quite tricky to photograph.
No, it's hard. I mean, obviously then if you interaction, you know, like with any wildlife, interaction is always great. Like, I mean, you said the mom with the baby, you know, that's probably one of my favorite photos is also mom holding a baby and kind of looking down at the baby looking up at mom. It's, I mean, it's incredible. It really is such I think we can relate to it so much as humans, you know, I think more than any other animal, almost like elephants in a way, we kind of have that emotional part in an image.
So that's also an important point. There's, you know, you could be looking at focusing on that little one at 200 mils and mom comes in and grabs it. Now, all of a sudden, you've got to pull all the way back. So having versatility and flexibility in that focal length is important.
Yeah. And also what I found as well, because, I mean, you've got a mask on. I found that often, like, the viewfinder fogs up as well, especially people wearing glasses. So I've often encouraged people to use their back screen.
Makes life a lot easier now with the mirrorless bodies.
and by doing that, you're almost kind of more aware of what's happening around you. So you can zoom out, zoom in, and kind of look around at different scenes. Whereas if you're just looking through the viewfinder, you might miss, you know, the potential individual coming out of frame, coming into the frame.
Yeah.
And also for us, you know, you're trying to be pretty quiet as well. So it's also quite hard for us to kind of give instructions when you out in the field, and it's almost like what I often do is kind of just show a bit of a slideshow of things to look for before the first trek.
Yeah.
Review it then, and then, and I take it day two and three, because it's quite hard in the group to kind of share a lot of things to look out for. So I think photographing with that back screen helps quite a lot.
So so you said eyes and obviously the face, the hands are a big one.
Hands, yeah.
For me, I love to shoot through vegetation to include some sort of thing between me and the subject. It sounds counterintuitive, but if you think about leopards in the open savannas, like you want it to be keen and viewable and you're like, wow, this is amazing. But actually, that's not the nature of the animal. So I think it's the same for gorillas. And what I love about any on-foot destination like Mana Pools or where you can get off the vehicles to shoot is that you are then able to start to, you know, half a meter to the right or 30 centimeters lower to get that awkward angle. And you might be cranking your neck.
Yeah.
But that you can include some vegetation in the foreground. I'm thinking, you know, we're going to reference a blog post on that we've got on this. And I'm thinking things like that, where you've just got the eye coming through with these washes of green. Bit of natural framing. And for me, what that does is it creates a, like you're almost a voyeur. You're kind of having a little sneak into their world rather than them being like, hey, look at me.
Exactly.
So it adds a little bit more depth, a little bit more secrecy, and a little bit more emotion to an image. So, and that's tricky to for someone who's not there being hosted by one of our team to think like that, because you're always so aware of trying to keep things out of, you know, distracting elements out of your frame that to think now about how can I use the vegetation around me to create that is not something that happens naturally. Mm. Obviously, it means using big leaves rather than hard sticks and twigs. And and maybe that's something that, you know, can be quite a distraction and a challenge in those environments. And the guides are often, and in Odzala, they use little scissors and secateurs to just cut away very quietly. In Uganda, they just hack away with a panga. But they're often clearing views for you. I actually had one guy who wanted to come and clear what I was using as my foreground. I was like, no, it's good. I want the leaves in here. So it's a bit counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But that's something else that I think people should look for compositionally with these. But definitely the hands, those fingernails, the eyes. When it comes to getting catchlights in the eyes, what would you say is your number one tip for trying to get that?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. You obviously, you know, that light can be such a tricky thing in that forest. You obviously got to see, you know, often if there's some of them playing around and they look up.
That's it.
So if they're sort of playing around, you know, then just stay with them for a while, because there's only a matter of time before they look up. Or, you know, there might be one picking, you know, especially with the chimps as well, you know, picking fruit and things, they often sort of look up, and that's your opportunity.
So those are the moments, and they can happen so quickly, and it doesn't even have to be like a neck tilt and look up. It's just this little
movement
of the eyes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you were talking just now about shooting off the back of the camera and you've got all this activity in front of you, the group is moving around and you can see what's going on. Sometimes that can almost be too overwhelming. I often would say to guests, just have a look. Let's stay with this one.
Yeah.
This particular gorilla who's in a good area, good light, or less distracting elements. Don't worry about all the others, even if that one is busy picking its nose and you want a funny photograph. Yeah. Stay here and stay with that one, because the chances are at some point it is going to glance and have a look up, and then you bank that. Then you can start to explore.
Yeah.
So I think almost like a checklist here would be focusing on the eyes, looking for those portraits, looking for moments where they're looking up. Look at the hands. Feeding. There's another really great image when, like, they grab a piece of vegetation and they kind of strip it through their teeth like that. Yeah. So you've got this beautiful contrast of the green against their yellow teeth.
Yeah.
And then hopefully some eyes. So if an animal is feeding, just stay with that one. Just spend a bit of time. I think you could easily find yourself, because an hour goes very quickly.
Flies.
And that's, again, another reason to have more than one trek. You know, three is really good, because it really does fly. But you could find yourself chasing and trying to look around and moving around, photographing here, try this, move there, step that way, get up. And you can actually walk away with very little, rather than just going and slowing down and being a little bit more intentional. Mm. So seeing, okay, based in this habitat, what are the kind of shots that I could check here? Okay, cool. It's fairly open. Let me pull back a little bit. Let me see if I can get a full body gorilla in there, because that's also something that you would want to have eventually.
Yeah.
If it's really thick, then I'm suggesting that you're probably going in a little bit tighter. Maybe you could even then start to utilize the vegetation. So there's a little bit of a thought process to it. And absolutely. I guess that's where traveling with us helps.
I found one of the hardest things to try and capture, though, is the size and the muscles of a silverback.
Yeah. And you don't want to go up next to him and put your arm around him and say cheese.
So you check the difference, do a bit of a comparison with the bicep.
Not going to work.
But that's often an image that I found is when they look at you, you fill the frame, you get an idea of kind of how big they are, but it's quite a tough thing to capture in a single image.
It very much is. I'm thinking back to our treks last year. There was one opportunity where we were able to get quite close to this silverback, and with a 35 mil just low down on the ground. And that's another nice thing with this little 35 is it weighs nothing, so you can just keep it at your side. And you know, this particular image, we'll see if we use this one as the feature for this one, but what blows my mind is the size of their forearms.
Yeah.
And you don't see that when they're sitting because their body just blends in.
Yeah.
And maybe that's another kind of shot is the, just the hair, the detail of the hairs and when the arm bends and just, there are so many opportunities to not only shoot with intent, but then to crop and edit afterwards.
Oh yes. Yeah.
So I would also then go as far as to say that this is one of those opportunities where you should shoot. We've just told people to think a little bit more, but I would shoot more and think less.
Yeah.
Because you are going to be dealing with lower shutter speeds in this soft light, a little bit of movement. So when you talk about interaction, as long as they're interacting slowly and not too fast, please. So it is one that you can shoot more and then to be able to start to play around with different crops to see what works.
What works for you.
Yeah.
What I like about that image is also you can see a bit of the chest as well. And I think that's part of if you can see some of that chest. You can really see the muscle, just how broad it is.
And no, they are absolutely massive. And again, I think that's where you want to be able to showcase that size.
Yeah.
And from an editing perspective, again, looking at this black and white, obviously gorillas, they really do translate well into black and whites.
Oh yeah.
From an editing side, one of the challenges I've seen in the past is a little bit of a green cast across the images. Obviously it's the secondary light coming off of all the leaves and the vegetation.
Yeah.
But black and whites for me, I'm very drawn to them when it comes to gorillas.
And I found for the most part, the images don't need a lot of editing. Doesn't need too much. Apart from cropping a bit of, whites and blacks and things, it's because the light generally is, you've got this beautiful contrast with the gorillas being dark, the beautiful greens.
Yeah.
It really doesn't need a hell of a lot.
No. And again, so maybe this is, from a settings perspective, maybe counterintuitive for a lot of people, but underexposing significantly when you're working in these environments, it's already dark. Why?
Yeah.
Well, you've got a dark subject,
yeah,
dappled light, and then dark green backgrounds a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so I've seen it with, it's often the tip that you give the people who are not necessarily in your group, is you see how bright the images are on the back of their viewfinder. The ISO has gone through the roof because they're only able to shoot at 5.6.
Yeah.
Underexposing by two full stops in a lot of instances, depending on if you're going in tight with that nice eye, but at least by one in the majority of the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't need a super fast shutter speed.
No.
No, so you can go one over focal length. So if you go the 70 to 200, usually around 200, 250, is most of the time it's enough for gorillas because they're quite nice. They generally just sit still. And as long as you don't sort of move around and shake around too much, that's more than enough.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. Yeah. One thing that I do find, we're speaking gorillas now, and obviously this is mainly with mountain gorillas in Uganda. Mm. For Odzala, it's a complete different beast.
Yeah, you've done that quite a lot.
I have, and we don't get nearly as close until something approaches you and moves past, but I'd say the closest I've been there is maybe 10 meters.
Okay.
So compare that to a Uganda where you're probably sitting 2-3 meters from a silverback at times. Yeah. And there, my recommendation for guests when we go is 400 mils.
Okay, so it's quite a big...
Yeah, 300 or 400 mils, and I've never shot anything on a wide angle there with an Agra. Yeah. And they are, they're just, it's a different protocol. It's a different habitat.
Yeah.
Very difficult photography, thick, thick undergrowth.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's because they're a little bit more arboreal than the mountain gorillas, often shooting up and against bright sky, which is an exposure nightmare.
Yeah.
So you really do work a lot harder, I would say, for those sightings out there. But still, you spoke about, you know, seeing the chest. There was an encounter that we had. I wasn't with our group on this particular morning, but some of the ladies had, there was a new silverback moving into an area. And he's got this beautiful red head on him. Mm. And he was sitting in this window where they've got these shots of the chest through the vegetation and everything. Oh. But this chest is so beautifully exposed, it literally looks like a Batman suit.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And this gorilla just sitting there giving them the stink eye through the foliage. And focal length was crucial in getting that. Yeah. So in the Republic of the Congo and the Odzala, focal length 300 to 400 mils, 70 to 200 is going to put you a little bit shy of where you need to be, but everything else remains the same. You know, keeping an eye on that shutter speed, shooting wide open, sucking in as much light as possible in that space, keeping an eye on those shutter speeds and the ISOs, and underexposing.
Yeah, and are you potentially looking for some high key stuff then, if you're dealing with a lot of those bright skies, really, you know, just blowing out the skies to get detail in the.
You can, but it's a bit like we were saying earlier, you know, that dappled light. So you've got these little windows of bright white rather than, you know, it's not like a bird on a stick type thing where it's a gorilla perched there.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of busyness and noise of leaves and vegetation behind. So I would honestly say that, like, photographing gorillas in Odzala has to be that is the most difficult photography that I have experienced. It's very rewarding, and the experience side of things, you know, apart from the differences in the group size, because there it's only 4 guests at a time with a local tracker and a local guide, compared to the group sizes which are larger in Uganda. So very different experiences, very complimentary. I would suggest that people who are interested in doing a little bit more adventure consider doing Western lowland gorillas, especially if you have done and enjoyed the mountain gorillas.
Yeah, I mean, you did a presentation on that whole experience that you had earlier this year, and it looks incredible.
No.
I mean, gorillas is a part of it, but there's so much more as well that Odzala offers. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. And then chimps, you haven't done the chimps yet.
That I haven't done. Now, I believe they're a different beast. Eh?
They're a totally different beast. I mean, totally opposite to gorillas that kind of just sit and chill. These chimps, I mean, you hardly ever get them just kind of sitting down. If they do, it's for short periods.
So the first thing that I'm thinking there is forest environment, movement.
Yeah.
How on earth are you managing shutter speeds, and or do you work with it?
You kind of just work with it. So what I'd normally like to do is I like to do chimps before gorillas for people, just so they can kind of get used to photographing in that forest, and again to do two tricks with the chimps. It's a lot easier walk, so it's a lot flatter and things, but you need to have patience, because, you know, they, a lot of the times you get them, they're up in the trees, you know, especially if the figs already, they absolutely love those figs. But again, it comes down to having patience. If a lot of the people that go there, you know, they'll stand away for maybe 10-15 minutes and then kind of get bored and go look for other chimps to photograph. Whereas a lot of time, if you just sit there, wait for them to come down, you'll get a window, you know, maybe 10-15 minutes where they sort of chill on the ground. But if they're bouncing around in the trees, I mean, forget it.
It's the same sort of focal lengths,
also 70 to 200. I mean, there have been times where I thought maybe 400 would be nice, especially if they're high up, but yeah, again, patience, just, and trusting your local guide, and spending time with those individuals. And I feel with the chimps, they're a little bit more lenient on your time. You know, with gorillas, they kind of give you an hour. I've had times, you know, spend two and a half hours with chimps before, because they make sure you have a good quality hour of viewing.
So, I mean, you could potentially rock up and be on the tail end of a hunt, and these animals are just moving. And yeah. So they're not going to say, right, well, we're going to stick with them, and we've been tracking them now for an hour, and we've just seen their backsides as they keep moving through the forest. They will extend your time, and as they start to rest, then say, cool, now we can really start to get some time and spend another half an hour or whatever with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And, you know, in Uganda, in Kibali, they've got the habituated chimps, but you can also do the habituating experience, where chimps that are a little bit more wild. I wouldn't recommend that for photographers, because you don't get as close. But bear in mind that these chimps have been habituated for quite a number of years. Yeah. You know, so yes, they move around more than gorillas, but you can, if you just bide your time, you can get them on the ground, you know, catching a bit of a snooze and maybe a bit of interaction between individuals. But what I love about them is they're also a lot more vocal. So there's a lot of interaction, you know, hitting the trees as a form of communication. It sounds like this massive drum.
And there's big buttress roots.
Yeah.
And the immediate thing that I'm thinking there is like a bit of a slower shutter speed where the head stays still and maybe you get the movement in the arms.
You can definitely play around with that, yeah, absolutely. But it's tough, you know, there's a lot of things happening. And
also very low light, eh?
Also very low light. Yeah, I'd say not as thick as Burundi, but you've got less sort of undergrowth in the forest. Bigger trees, I'd say, but kind of less undergrowth than in Burundi.
Yeah. And if you had to choose between the two, which ones, you know, we're sending you into Uganda, you've got two permits. Are you going to chimps or are you going to gorillas? Okay, how many times have you seen gorillas before you answer this? So let's get some context.
Gorillas, probably, you're tracking each trek is maybe about 15, 20, close to 20 now, yeah.
Okay. And so you've got two permits.
Yeah.
What would you choose, chimps or gorillas?
Oh, it's like choosing a favorite child. I probably would lean towards gorillas. I think, you know, just, look, they're a lot easier to photograph, but I love the chimps, but gorillas just, there's something about, I can't explain what it is, but it's just something about them that I'm drawn to. And that's why I'd love to go see the mountain gorillas as well.
Yeah. And so, okay, 15 to 20 treks in, number of images in the bank.
Yeah.
What would you look for from an image perspective? So, you know, I'm picturing someone who's planning a trip to go and see these gorillas. They might have an image in mind, but they might not as well. So you, after 15, 20 visits, what image would you have in mind to try and get out if everything aligned perfectly for you?
Yeah, I would still, I think that mother and baby, I mean, I had a bigger, I think the baby was about sort of 9, 10 months. I'd say like a really small baby against mom, sort of looking down with good light on the face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an eye contact between the two of them, that would be ideal. I mean, if a silverback was in there as well, looking at us, like a whole family portrait.
There we go.
And like, you can get these kind of images. It's like anything. The more you go, the more opportunities you get, the luckier you become. So that would be something that I would like to get. I'm not going to Uganda anytime soon, unfortunately, but hopefully something pops up and I can get back there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, if I had to picture an image that I would really like, it's eyes through green vegetation. So that soft wash of the greenery, shallow depth of field, beautiful amber eyes with catch lights, color. So you've got these oranges, blacks and greens.
Yeah.
For me, that would be the thing. So I guess in there, hopefully for just to wrap this all up is we're saying, if you could only do this once in your life, go for at least two, preferably three treks.
Yeah.
You can take one camera body and one lens. You're going to take a 70 to 200.
Yeah.
You are immediately going to walk in with your settings being slightly underexposed, probably starting off at one full stop under.
Yeah.
And you're going to slowly work your way from head to toe. So starting off with eyes, looking for little moments where they look up, portraits, go for the detail of the hands, down to the ground where they may be grabbing shoots and leaves and vegetation, feeding behavior, and then starting to think around shooting through vegetation to give that sense of space and a voyeurism. And if you only have one lens and you can't get a wider shot, is to maybe step back a little bit if the opportunity allows, to show them in their environment rather than just being right on top of them the whole time.
Yeah, or create like a little pano.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I don't think I actually did that in the forest, but that's a good way. So with that 70 to 200, what you're saying, portrait orientation, pull all the way back, grab your shot, and then grab left, grab right, and maybe stitch those together.
Exactly.
It's a very good idea.
Yeah.
So just remember that on top of all the other things that are on the go.
Yeah.
And what else, one other tip. Let's think about it from a photography perspective. In our chat with Luke, where we spoke about Bohoma, we touched on the fact that they provide gators and sticks at the lodge, and you've got your porters. I think sometimes photographers overthink this. They've got raincoats, they've got this, that, and the next thing. Do you have any other little tips?
No, not that I can think of off the bat, really. I mean, I wouldn't. Yeah, I think in this case, keeping it simple is better. You know, don't go with tripods and all these things. It just kind of gets in the way. And so yeah, I should say just keep it simple. Make sure you understand your camera. Now, ideally, a camera that can deal better with high ISOs, like a lot of the new cameras can, because you are going to be shooting like, probably you're going to be hovering between 2.5 and 4,000 from an ISO point of view. So be open to that, understand that that's what's going to happen. And then, like you said, a wide open aperture. So your lens choice is very important.
The only thing that I could think of would be a little microfiber cloth. You know, for the if your viewfinder gets a bit blocked, or if you're wearing glasses, that they get there. But otherwise, it's not necessary. You don't have to overcomplicate it. Like you say, keep it simple.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you guys covered it, but just, you know, I think what's more important is like shoes and kind of, from a clothing point of view. Have stuff that you're comfortable in. But photography, keep it simple.
And I think maybe just to close, is the other side of it is to actually put the camera down at some stage.
Even and that's phone.
That's what having a multiple treks allows you to do. If you're only going in there once and you're paying the premium for those permits at $850 or more, depending where you're trekking, you maybe go in with the mindset of having to get a return on that investment. And so you just want to shoot. But having multiple treks allows you to actually just slow down, step back, and appreciate and take in a whole lot more of what's going on around than just being behind the lens the whole time.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's such an incredible experience. It's unlike a safari where you're kind of in a vehicle and there's maybe a bit of a disconnect. Yeah, I feel that you really are connected to the animals, to the environment, to everything. So absolutely, taking your eyes away from the camera and just seeing what's in front of you is very special.
It's a privilege, a bit like mana pools, you know, to be on foot with animals,
And
not have that barrier to be separated through a vehicle or anything. Well, I hope that people will find this useful. We're going to share the link for the blog, which kind of gives a lot of images and some examples of what to think about. And I think that's a good part about this as well, is do your research, see what others have photographed.
Yeah.
If you're going to Sosa's Flay, have a look at what, or Dead Flay, have a look at what images you like from there. How did they get that? So hopefully the blog post in combination with this podcast will help people get prepared for photographing average apes. I mean, great apes.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're thinking of joining us, you absolutely should. I think it's an incredible experience, and we've got the podges going this year, next year. So jump on board, and you won't be disappointed.
Lovely stuff.
Andrew, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, guys. We'll catch you soon. Cheers.